What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. We're heading into the peak of the summer, the 4th of July holiday. And it's been a tumultuous week in the world of American politics. We're not going to touch on that.
No.
So to cheer us up and to kind of get our freedom flags flying at full mast, we're going to have some revisionist history for you. We're going to talk The Patriot, one of my all-time, and I consider it a guilty pleasure for reasons we'll get into, but it's a top three guilty pleasure for me. I've watched this movie more times than I like to admit, more than it's probably a top five most watched movie for me, and I know you love it. So I'm Wesley, and with, of course, my co-host Spencer Scott Holmes. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm down to talk about this movie because this is one of those ones we've been waiting like years to talk about. It felt like ever since we started to get together and podcast, The Patriot always kind of came up. It's like, we got to do it. We got to do it at some point. Because this movie, when this thing came out, like, this is that good old, it's almost like another golden age of amazing war films that starts from Saving Private Ryan and goes on for about almost a decade. There's just, I mean, probably a little bit less than that, but there's so many fantastic movies that follow after that. And this one right here, I mean, it's Roland Emmerich, and I always like Roland Emmerich. I don't care what anybody says. Like, most of his movies are fantastic in my book, but this one right here probably is my all-time favorite Roland Emmerich movie. And just the whole, you don't get a whole lot of Revolutionary War movies either. Like, that's one of those ones, like, it's very, oddly for being as American as possible, you know, we just don't get that many. And maybe it's just, they just don't want to offend British people. I think that's what it's kind of boils down to, is like, you're like, hey, you know what? The British are our friends now. We can't just go out making movies about, you know, shooting redcoats and calling them Tories and whatnot. And that, because, you know, if we do it a little too much, the British are just going to come back and burn down the White House again. You know what I mean? That's just what's going to happen, you know, because they get pissed off because of how we like treat them in a Revolutionary War movie.
Yeah. I don't know. This movie, I mean, historical fiction in general, slippery slope. Pretty much every element of it is a slippery slope. I mean, it's so many things to consider. You have to discuss intent and, you know, the filmmaker and, you know, where they draw the line between fact and fiction. And then you got the moral dilemma at times. I mean, this movie really gets involved with that to an extent.
Yeah.
There's the controversies that surround this film are very valid, in my opinion. I just don't care.
Because they're missing the blockbuster part of it all. That's the thing they don't get about it. And it's not that, you know, this movie, okay, it still takes from a lot of sources. You know what I mean? It still pulls from actual historical things. I mean, it wraps its own story into it. So it's like historical, I guess, fiction. But the big picture, I think people sometimes miss out on. They get stuck on like the little things that happen in this movie. And it's like, dude, no. Stop thinking about those little teeny things. That doesn't matter. Look at this battle scene right here. It's so badass. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, this movie, oh gosh. Another thing about this one for me is incredibly nostalgic because, like, kind of like the same nostalgia I have for Days of Thunder, not quite that level, but I remember the local news growing up. You know, Mel Gibson's down the road. Rock Hill is just south of Charlotte a little bit.
Oh, yeah, because South Carolina's where all this stuff's at, too.
Yeah, the ending of the movie, the big battles at the end of the movie, his homestead area is more northern part of South Carolina, so closer to Charlotte. And a lot of that wasn't far away, so local news is all about it. And, of course, a lot of it takes place in Charleston, but it's not filmed all in Charleston. But we'll get to some of that, too. But I remember when this was being filmed, it's a big deal, and it was like, you know, Mel Gibson's in town. I love that guy. Everybody loves it. I mean, this is before.
Yeah.
Before the Mel Gibson, you know, fucks his life up situation.
Well, because this is Mel Gibson's probably almost, I mean, you know, he's been at the top of the game for a while, but he's still like at such a massive high level.
Yes.
I mean, Braveheart's only 5 years before this. This is still the point where, like, even in Clueless, like, that's the number one guy that she wants is Mel Gibson, which I always think that even at that point seems weird because it's like, he's like 40 years old, or not that much older, but, like, you know what I mean? He felt like way older than that character. But you know what I mean? It's like there's so much Mel Gibson kind of stuff. I mean, even the Lethal Weapons, they're still, I mean, number four has just come out, and that's still a huge hit. You know what I mean? There's so much good stuff going on Mel Gibson wise.
Yeah. He was still, you know, a big deal. And of course he has his big, big, massive hit, at least financially, with Passion of the Christ a couple years.
Yep.
What, about 4 years after this?
I think so.
Four.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he made a bajillion dollars off of that. And then things started kind of going downhill for him a little bit after that, but he's still putting out good content. I mean,
dude, he still puts out some amazing movies, even if they are on like that kind of like low end, kind of like, you know, straight to, well, not, you know, whatever you'd call straight to DVD nowadays type stuff.
Yeah, this is nostalgic for good old Mel Gibson era before he tarnished himself. Nostalgic for, you know, kind of living at home and this movie being filmed nearby, and that, you know, there was that, and nostalgic for pre 9/11. This is right on the cusp of that. You know, dude, if this movie came out the next year, it would have made $847 billion because
and nobody would have complained about it, you know what? No. I mean, like all the little things would have, so yeah, this would have been the movie. It's like, this is the movie we need right now. Like, kind of, yeah. Feel
I'm surprised they didn't re-release it. I mean,
yeah,
if they would have waited a year, of course, you know,
yeah,
hindsight's 2020, which I don't know if it would have been good to exploit that anyway.
But then again, it could have been also cut in weird ways, because it still fits in the, that almost like, because after 9/11, sometimes it's like, okay, war's not fun anymore. And it's that question that you always sort of ask. It's like the James Cameron thing, like where he says, like, terrorism isn't funny after 9/11. Like, was it funny before 9/11? That's what I always kind of wonder. Like,
well, he made it pretty funny at times. Yeah, I don't know. I think, no, this movie, everything was about patriotism.
Yeah,
right there, rightfully so, after that happened, in a movie called The Patriot. I remember it was a big deal, like, the year after 9/11, the first Super Bowl was the Patriots and the Eagles. And everybody's like, this is staged, but I still like it a lot. And yeah, the Yankees were in the World Series. So having like this, yeah, this movie comes out post 9/11, it makes $847 billion. Like, yeah, it makes just so much money. I wonder if there was like a jump in VHS rentals. Or,
well, that's what I was going to say. I bet you this movie almost did even more sales, like, kind of like DVD, VHS, maybe around that kind of time period. It'd be interesting to see those numbers.
Probably. I would imagine it did. I mean, oh gosh, another crazy time in American history. Well, you know, we're already getting nostalgic, and we haven't even jumped to the flashback portal. You know, I think that we should do that.
Oh, I'm down. I'm there.
All right, so flashback portal, if you've never listened to the show, this is when we go back in time to the week this film was released, which this is kind of like a weird scenario with, I guess, the dates with this film. We're having some trouble with it. We've got it narrowed down to a particular point in time enough to talk about it. But yeah, we go back in time to the week this film was released of our Rewind review, and we just look at the pop culture surrounding that time and kind of reminisce about the world that was. And we're going back to June 27th, 2000, new millennium, Y2K.
Yep, yep.
Excuse me, Willennium. Sorry. I hated that song.
Y2 Jericho.
Y2 Jericho. 3, 2, 1, let's go. Okay. Yeah, we're going to June 27th, 2000. I figured out by looking at this, I was in San Augustine, Florida when this movie was released. I didn't see it that way. I did see this in theaters.
Yeah.
I think I saw it really close to the end of its run, though. And one of the movies that I saw was released kind of triggered me to what, you know, when I was. And my buddy Alex, who you've heard on the podcast in the past, who's actually coming on for a special episode in a couple of weeks, we're doing like a reminiscing on this separate episode I got coming out. But it's we are down in St. Augustine, Florida, and they went to see the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie. And I just remember
yeah, that. Yeah, I remember when that came out.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. I had no idea that was 20 years ago. But we're also, I've been teasing that a while back. I was looking for some more information for the Flashback Portal, like some video sales and other stuff, and nobody could really help me out. And then I just stumbled into this treasure trove of Billboard magazine, like the full issues.
Yeah.
Of, you know, going back all through time, pretty much every issue is on this website. You can just see everything. And it's just like, it's gluttonous. I could build a whole podcast off this.
Yeah, there's just enough stuff there.
It really is. So before we get to the main stuff, just going to quickly skim through some of the side stuff. I found the top video sales.
Ooh.
When The Patriot was released in theaters, what was at the video store? What were people renting? The answer to that question is The World Is Not Enough.
There's a good one right there. I like that Bond flip quite a bit. Yeah, Bond film quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. World Is Not Enough at number one. I'll just kind of tell it. I'll just kind of go through all of them so we don't spend too much time on it. But American Pie. You got Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace is third.
Yes, yes. It was a huge time.
Oh, yeah. Galaxy Quest, a fun one that we should talk
about.
Love
that movie.
Yes, that movie's great. South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Another fantastic flick.
Playboy Video Centerfold Playmate of the Year, 2000. It doesn't say who it was.
Well, you know, there's a certain, you know, section for that. I love how that's like, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, well, you couldn't go down to Walmart and pick that one up.
Jodie Ann Patterson, I think is what it says. I think it says Patterson, but I'm not sure. The next one is Playboy Sex Court.
And then the following list of the VHS collection is just more Playboy and Hustler. And
no, actually, number nine is Mary Kate and Ashley Switching Goals.
Following up after the Playboy collection.
Life is Beautiful is number 10. Berto Bernini. Didn't he win the Oscar for that? Didn't he win like best
for something?
Best actor, whatever. Who gives a fuck? I don't know. I just love that it's like Playboy, Mary Kate and Ashley.
It would only be funny if that was in between there. Like
it would be.
Because it's like, is the guy that's written the Playboy collection is also getting the Mary Kate and Ashley? Like that's becoming a.
There's questions that need to be answered.
There's a lonely man on a Thursday night, frozen pizza in one hand, a couple of VHSs in the other.
We're going to look at mainstream rock track real quick because we've always wanted to, like, Spencer's always been like, what's on the rock charts? And finally, we'll be able to do it as we're in the 2000s and nobody cares as much anymore. Like, if this would be really cool to look at when we're in the 80s, 70s. Yes.
I will say there's something good about the right around this time. Maybe it's just tab it later, but this is one of the very few times that metal is actually kind of like allowed to be sort of like in, you know, major motion picture soundtracks and so on like that. Because there's that period, it's like the XXX and so on, where you get like Rammstein in there, and even the original Fast and the Furious still has some of that in there too, you know, or Daredevil and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and, you know, even like things like, Jet Li's The One, where it's got hit or Let the Bodies Hit the Floor and things like that. You know,
yeah, this is so we're finally gonna look at it. We're gonna go fast through this because we got the main stuff to get to. But mainstream rock tracks, just some funny stuff. I Disappear by Metallica,
yeah, Mission Impossible 2
soundtrack, Kryptonite, Three Doors Down, If I Go Crazy.
Song has nothing to do with Superman in there. That's what always bothered me about it. You listen to that song, it has nothing to do with Superman.
Kryptonite. Yeah, he says, will you call me Superman?
He says that, but the rest of it has nothing to do with Superman. He's just talking about himself. That's what always bothered me about that song.
Okay, I'm just saying, maybe he's Superman.
I think he thinks he is. And,
Definitely thinks so.
Thinks he is,
Doors Down. That's that takes me back to a specific vehicle with a specific person, my buddy Keith. And he had a Camaro, and we were driving all through West Iredell High School, all the country roads out there in West Iredell, near my grandma's house, and listening to Kryptonite. Number three, with all lot of old Paul, that's what Creed. Judith, what is it? Who is this? I don't know who that is. Sour Girl, Other Side by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to go through all these. There's just a lot of them. Those are the main ones.
I thought you said there's Limp Bizkit on there.
That was for another. That was like an advertisement I saw.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was. But I did see some. I did see some Limp Bizkit somewhere in this magazine. It was a cool advertisement with Limp Bizkit Stained and POD.
It's always so funny because when I think of Limp Bizkit, like when he was all popular, like in the 90s and early 2000s, like I could kind of almost care less. But mm-hmm. as time has gone on, I have such like a nostalgicness for it. Like when I hear Limp Bizkit, like I'm like one, I really enjoy it, and it so takes me back. Like that's like it's the weird thing. It's like you might not have liked it then, but now I almost like really appreciate it now in a weird way. It's like I get it now finally.
Well, I think I told you that story about like Fred Durst. Well, I think it was all of Limp Bizkit showed up to our mall.
Oh, I think you kind of did.
Yeah, I don't remember it exactly. Like, oh God, people still talk about that. It's like back home. Like, yeah, I don't live in the same part of the state I did when I went to high school and elementary, and middle school. I'm like 2 hours away, but I'm still friends with those a lot of those people, and then I'll still hear people reference. Like, remember that time Limp Bizkit showed up to the Signal Hill Mall, which I called the small because it's so tiny.
Yeah,
there's nothing going on there, but 40 and Interstate 40 and Interstate 77 kind of meet where. I grew up, so uh-huh. you can get random people in there from time to time that were actually kind of important to stop and get gas, and all the you know banjos would come out of the woods like now 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 now. Hey, there's that pretty man from Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, well, I think everybody's kind of town has a story like that where it's just like there's that mm-hmm. one band kind of moment or something like that, or even celebrity thing. Like one of the big ones for where I'm at is this place that used to be concerts at called Mount Zion, which is kind of ironic. They had it like a church, but they'd do like punk and metal shows there. I think it's that always that thing where the church is like, you know what? At some point, one of these kids is going to need a place to go, and they're going to be like, I love going to these concerts, and hey, look, God's right around the corner, and we're going to get them. Like, I know it. But instead, it's more just a bunch of kids out there selling like drugs and, you know, drinking beers in the parking lot and then going to fight each other at a punk rock concert and so on like that. But the one big one is like, at one point, AFI played like two shows there, and that's like the one where you always see people go like, oh, do you remember the time that AFI was there? I mean, this place was teeny tiny. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's one of those ones, like, it's not that big. It's just a little teeny place. It's pretty much the place that everybody's high school band plays at. That, at the end of the day, that's what it was. And I remember even doing a couple of, you know, live videos there for certain bands, you know, just in high school and whatnot. And now it's, you know, just sits there dormant after many a years.
Sad.
Yeah, well, one point we went back there. I was like, hey, man, I wonder if there's any concerts going on there. We should go check to see what that's like. And we go back, and there's like a big old cowboy statue. And it's like the cowboy church. And it's like, and all I thought about this actually ties in the Patriot, because this is the way I literally described it. It's like, I got to the point, I'm like, I came back to town. I'm like, you know what? Why don't I ever see any of these punk rock guys or anything else there? And all I thought about was like, the cowboy church came by. They're like, we're putting on one more Mount Zion show. And then when they put them all inside the concert room, they're like,
they locked the doors. It up.
They're like, burn the church, Captain. There was no honor in this.
Burn the There's church, no honor in this.
That's what I assumed happened. That was the last Mount Zion show. They took them all out right then and there. They're like, we're going to clean house, literally.
The cowboy Baptist got to him like, we're gonna clean this town up. Top 40 tracks real quick. I'll go through this pretty fast because we're not gonna like any of this. Number one, Everything You Want, Vertical Horizon. Hated that song.
Yeah, I kind of remember that one.
Everything you want, it's everything you need. It's everything that'll play inside of an Applebee's is what it is.
Applebee's.
It's gonna be May, some NSYNC. Oops. Hold on. Oops, I did it again.
Oh, I guess that is by that. Because I would have thought that was a little bit older than that, but I guess that is right then.
Yeah.
Turning.
Yeah. Britney Spears.
That one's nostalgic to me still, so I'll say that.
That red leather.
Yeah.
There was an awakening. I'm just saying. There you go, Pink. Be With You, Enrique Iglesias. Let's just step off and try again. Aaliyah. So rest in peace.
Yeah.
Queen of the Damned. Wasn't that her? Yeah, that was her.
Oh, that is right. I forgot about that. Yeah. See, that's, you got to give me a movie reference, and then it all makes sense to me.
Yep. Yeah, I did. See, I worked it in
there.
You
give me a movie reference, like, oh, there we go. I know exactly what you're talking about. You know?
I gotta tell you about the song coming up. Number seven, can you leave me higher? You got some Creed.
See, that's the song that, like, whenever I think of, like, the Ted Nugent song, like, or the Damn Yankees one, like, can you take me high enough? Everybody always think of the Creed. I'm like, no, not the Creed one, the Ted Nugent song.
Damn Yankees.
Yeah.
I love that song.
I love Damn Yankees. Mm. Well, I love anything Ted Nugent. I don't care.
I can't believe this song is that old. So remember Macy Gray? I try to say goodbye and I choke. So my buddy, the reason I'm laughing, he was like, we were in the car one day and that song came on. He goes, oh my God, guys. She says, I try to say goodbye and I choke, try to walk away. Anyway, he thought the song said, I blow bubbles when you are not near.
And I was like, legitimately thought that?
Yeah, he legitimately thought that.
Oh my God.
You have to know this person. It's not shocking. I'm going to send him this episode just so he can laugh. Bent by Matchbox 20. Who, speaking of a person who just makes music to go inside a restaurant, it's Rob Thomas.
Yes, definitely.
He just makes music now. And then, oh my God. Oh my God. Number 10. This is way more nostalgic than I want it to be, Spencer. I'm feeling guilty. But the truth of the matter is that she had dumps like a truck. I was like, what?
That oh,
thong,
I remember.
Thong.
Yeah.
Cisco.
My buddy Cisco, like, used to, there was a handful of terrible years for him because every time I'm like, hey, my name's Cisco. Oh, like that song. They'd be like, no, not like this song. Yeah, totally like the song.
We would not have been friends for very long because every time that he would try to say something, it would be like, dumps like a truck. That was like, what? Every single time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There was a torturous moment for a bit, and then nobody remembered anymore.
I still remember. I remember. Oh my gosh. That's funny. The thong song. Whatever happened to him? He was in some movies for a minute.
Yeah. He almost felt like kind of just like that. 6 months, and then I don't know what happened.
Yeah, he had a really good like R&B song that was like, I don't know. He had two hit. He wasn't a one hit wonder. He had
a one hit wonder, but he was like a moment. Like, you know what I mean? Like one of those ones where there was like 6 months to a year just like killing it and then instantly disappeared, it felt like.
Had that silver hair thing going on. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Box office.
Yes.
Let's look at that. So the Patriot, we're kind of confused on what's going on. It seems like it was because it was close to the 4th of July, it was released at a weird time because we've both seen different release dates.
Yeah.
You've seen June 30th. I've seen June 27th.
Yeah. One of the posters says the 30th, but then you know what it might have been? The 27th might have been like a pre-showing kind of thing because the 30th is a Friday, but a lot of times there's sometimes showings beforehand to give or take what theater you're at.
Yeah, it's just weird. And then it's on the box office a week before this at 7th place, only making $9 million. So it tells me it was like one day.
If I had to guess why that was a week before, then is it might have had one of those weird, like, okay, it's in a New York, Los Angeles, and a couple other place showings, and that's probably what it is. And that's probably why it's kind of low.
Yeah, it's still $9 million is a lot to be just in two cities, but I don't know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm guessing, but there's probably Seattle, Miami, so on. But
yeah,
they might have done like one of those. This movie's a weird movie to do because, like, let's be honest, this feels like the movie that's gonna, you know, you do that for like artsier films. It feels like this movie's like, no, you need mom and pop in Oklahoma to like you to come out of the woodworks to come see this kind of film. Like this is for all America.
Oh yeah, you
know, and everybody who wishes they were an American.
Yeah, I mean, the movie did well at the box office. It's just hard to really gauge how good of an opening it had because it was such a weird dynamic. It's odd. But number one at the week that we're discussing, at least at the box office, opening this week with $73 million opening week. I did not remember this. I knew this movie was big, but I don't remember it being this big. Uh-huh. But The Perfect Storm.
That movie was pretty darn huge when it came, because I still remember seeing that one in theaters when it came out, same like right along the same time as Patriot. And the perfect storm was that one where, like, I feel like just everybody's like, oh, you got to go see this movie. It's just got the special effects, the storm, everything. And it's got George Clooney. You know, he just got off of Batman and Robin. But like that movie was talked about so big, and it's actually kind of weird because that movie feels kind of forgotten nowadays. Like it was humongous at the time. Yeah. And if you said it to somebody, they'd be like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. But it's not like, I don't just see things of like Perfect Storm popping up, like almost the same way you see even stuff like Twister or maybe even Dante's Peak or someone like that.
Yeah. It's not, it seems like it would be in that vein. It seems like it's in a weird way too good to be in that vein, but
maybe that's kind of like it. Because sometimes movies that kind of are like at that like high acclaim, critical, all that kind of stuff, sometimes those are the movies that ironically get a little bit more forgotten than actually the movies that are kind of maybe like just the one step below, but they're almost a little bit more fun and entertaining.
When I signed up for Vudu, which had to be like the better part of a decade ago, I mean, we're looking at 8-9 years at this point. Uh-huh. That was the, it gave me that movie and A Knight's Tale. Which I would have bought a Knight's Tale anyway. But.
Yeah, you know what, Al says, those two movies as a double pack, that's a hell of a deal right there.
Yeah, give me those two for free when I signed up. That was, it was, I signed up through Flixster.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had their own, like, Vudu thing, and they had, like, there was a partnership. And then it went to Vudu, and then Fandango bought Flixster, and now Fandango owns Vudu.
Yeah, because I remember, like, I had accounts that sort of shifted. I almost want to say at one point I did have a Flixster one and so on, and then I eventually just got pushed into a Vudu. And then at some point, Amazon just knew all my stuff from Vudu without me ever remember telling anybody about that.
Because of Movies Anywhere. If you sign up for Movies Anywhere, then it just distributes them. I'll be on YouTube.
Yeah, my YouTube stuff.
I'll see my movies that I own in there, and I could, like, oh, I can just watch it here. Which I do that a lot because I actually like their interface. So
yeah, no, I agree. Well, it's like I watch a lot of mine just even through the Amazon one too, because it's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I mean, I like that Amazon has like all that on there. I just was it felt like, oh, all of a sudden my stuff's all on here. Huh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Except for Lionsgate and MGM, which now I bet MGM will be on there because Amazon, didn't they just buy MGM?
That might have been the case. I think
they did. Yeah, they did, because they have all the Bond stuff now.
Oh, okay, yeah, then that's then definitely is on there.
Yeah. Anyway, that's way off topic, but that's, you know, interesting nonetheless. The Patriots, number two at the box office, though, bringing in $40 million, up 336.7% from last week. So something weird is.
It must have just been a limited screening. That's the only logical explanation.
Yeah. Or just maybe like one day.
The poster says the 30th. So I'm guessing that that had been like 30th everywhere. Mm-hmm. But they probably had some type of weird pre, I don't know.
They're clearly targeting. You know, the 4th of July week, you know. And the next week it actually moves down to the 3rd at $22 million. So just to kind of give, you know, a reference.
Yeah.
So it's still making good money. So Patriot number two at the box office. Number three, a movie that opened previously, Chicken Run.
Oh, that movie was a huge movie too at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever really seen that movie, to tell you the truth, but.
I don't think I have either.
I was going to see Patriot, and I remember someone was like, it's like that time where you're like, you're going to go see Chicken Run? Like, dude, the Patriot. Like, maybe because also Chicken Run's coming out. Here's this British film coming up against another movie where the British are like the most heinous enemies.
Boy, I tell you what, Mel Gibson is the king of revisionist British history, man. Good Lord. Going through this real quick. Number four, Me, Myself, and Irene.
That's a great
one. The Adventures of Rocky Bullwinkle, which we already mentioned.
Yeah, I would actually like to see that again, because I don't think I've seen that since it came out. Because I was a big Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon fan as a kid.
I spent all week, Alex's mom, his dad, his sister, all went down to St. Augustine when we did. We were down there with my grandparents. So it was like a big old fun family time. And I spent all week long with Alex hanging out. And they're like, we're going to go see Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm like, I'm going to go to the beach. So yeah. That was the only time I didn't hang out with them that whole week, is when they saw Rocky and Bullwinkle. I wonder if he remembers that. I'm gonna tell him.
It's probably scarred him for life.
Probably. Shaft, number six.
That's a great Shaft one right there, too.
The last one wasn't terrible either.
Liked it a lot. I mean, I like pretty much every Shaft movie. I don't think there's ever been one I didn't like. But
I was really hoping you'd just leave it at Shaft. I love pretty much every Shaft.
Every Shaft, yeah.
Every Shaft. Big Mama's House.
Oh, yeah, that was another big movie, too.
Oh, darling, that's a flashlight. Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, the remake. Love that one.
Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible 2.
Another good, great movie. Guys, see, these, I saw a lot of these movies in theaters too. Like,
yeah,
I'm trying to think, like, how did I see all these ones in theaters? This might have been right around that time period though, where like it started being like you get dropped off at the theaters because the theaters still didn't care about like how many ones you saw once you got through that first door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I'll just say last one I'll mention is number 10. A movie that really 100% is in my top five, like always, I always say this, is Gladiator.
Yeah, this is a big roster. See,
Gladiator, that's the thing, and is Patriot, like, in the theaters at the same time.
Well, that's what I'm almost thinking. There's a lot of big movies right now, so that's always going to pull away from like the percentage of money you make. Like, the movie is going to do the best is when you're a movie going up against nothing else, really. At the end of the day, that's how you make a lot of money. But if you're going up against another like bunch of just like almost pure A-lister films right there, or if anything, just a lot of really good ones, like, that's tough. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that whole list there, I mean, five of them are all AAA blockbusters. You know what I mean? And then the other five are still pretty big movies in their own ways.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that this is like the best the early 2000s has to offer, though, at the same time. I mean, there's good stuff in the early 2000s. It's just the 2000s didn't know what they needed to be for a long time, and then it gets shifted again the next year, as we talked about. So it's just a weird era.
Yeah. You know, there's great stuff in the 2000s, but it's just that it's the post two things, post 9/11 and post Matrix, kind of like warp things a bit.
Yeah, it's very true. But anyway, that's your flashback portal for the week of June 27th, 2000, or June 30th. Who gives a fuck anymore? You know, it's we got other things to talk about. We got a great movie that we need to discuss.
Oh, goddamn. We got one of the best movies ever made. One of the best war movies ever made. One of the best Mel Gibson movies ever made. Best Roland Emmerich movie ever made.
Now that's a discussion. So we'll have a lot to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have a nice little promo. And we'll be right back with our review of The Patriot. So June 27th, 2000, The Patriot is released.
I got a nice, it's literally sealed still.
You got the sealed Patriot?
Oh, I found it. It's even got Walmart on it, which makes it feel almost more patriotic.
Just when you thought it couldn't get more American.
Well, you know, come by and get the Patriot at Walmart. You know, punch a redcoat on the way out. I'm just a British man here. Oh, stop it! Do your job, boy.
British
is America coming through. Don't tread on me.
I just got this from the $5 bin.
Out of the way, commie. Like, well, I'm just English. Say fucking ding.
If you're, by the way, if you're just listening and not watching this, that was a kind of a weird transition, but we are holding up the VHS, the sealed VHS of The Patriot. Well, Spencer was.
I have it
here somewhere too. I don't know where it is. It's here.
I got kind of multiple copies of it. I got DVD. I got Blu-ray. I got VHS. I don't have Laserdisc.
Yeah.
Actually, well, by this point, you probably wouldn't be able to get Laserdisc. 2000 is just right past that point. I think 98 is about the cutoff. Maybe 99.
No Patriot Laserdisc. If there was, it would have revived the whole whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a movie. Look, let's just get this out of the way because I don't want to spend too much time on it. There's a great YouTube video telling you how historically inaccurate this fucking movie is. I know it. I don't need tweets all week being like, well, this movie lied about this and didn't talk about slavery. I fucking know.
It's not about slavery. It's about the Revolutionary War.
Well, here's the thing. Let's just get this out of the way. It's
about America versus England.
Spike Lee was right, though, because even Mel Gibson said that the way they handled it was kind of a cop-out.
There's that one line that I always thought just was weird, where it's just like, they're like, oh, we just work here. It's just like, you kind of say, it's like, it's 1776. Like, let's be honest. Like, what, you get like health benefits and everything like that?
Yeah. We're free men. We just work this land on a plantation for a white guy. Okay, got it.
It is seven white kids.
It's like,
yeah, I remember seeing that like in theaters and as a kid, just kind of being like, Like, no. What do you, like, come on. I know what you're doing. We're at the 90s, which is the 90s. It's kind of like, come on, guys. Let's get together. You know what I mean? Burger King Kids Club. You know what I mean? Like, we're all part of the same team.
It's the slavery, the Burger King Kids Club.
It's like, because that's what the 90s feels like. It's like, hey, man, we're you know, it's okay, man. Let's just forget about it, you know? Future.
I mean, look, to be fair, there were people like that did exist. I mean, so it's not that much of a stretch,
like,
but...
Yeah, there's always going to be that good guy who's like, you know what, I believe I'm doing the right thing no matter what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, so maybe, were there wealthy plantation owners that didn't have African slaves? Some. Like, I had like five. But, but did they also have them just hanging around working there for like, no, I have a hard time believing this. It was kind of a cop out. The biggest criticism in this movie, when it comes to historical stuff, and I'm getting this out of the way so we don't complain about it the whole time, so we can have fun.
Yes,
looking at it as a movie, because I'm getting to a point. The biggest criticisms, one is it gets really blurry, the line between historical fiction and just historical fact, and then also the concessions it makes for Mel Gibson's character, really his whole family. To try to make him the ultimate good guy. Like, he is completely squeaky clean, except for his past, which they don't show.
He murdered a bunch of, you know, Native Americans and so on at one point.
But what I'm saying is, in the story that's being portrayed, he is completely, justified in everything he does.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, let's be honest. Probably the guy in 1776, nobody else is questioning his actions of the previous war.
Exactly.
You know, I hate to sort of say it, like, at that time period, like, they're not questioning that. Like,
yeah. So it's, if you're looking at this from an historical epic that's supposed to be accurate historically, then I totally get any criticism you have. But if you look at it from just a movie perspective, this historical fiction, how much of it was intended to be, how much of they intended it to be a historical fiction movie, that's debatable. But the movie is really, really, really fun to watch. And there's a lot of similarities between this movie and Independence Day, another Roland Emmerich film for me, which we'll kind of get into.
Yeah, because that's the thing. At the end of the day, if you sum up just the big picture of what it is, it's just, hey, it's the Revolutionary War. It gets all, like, the main points across. If you want more details, well, by all means, you pick up a book and start reading. You know what I mean? But if you just need to be like, give me a summary of the Revolutionary War. Like, I don't know what it is. You know what I mean? I'm Heath Ledger. I'm from Australia. You know, let's see what this is all about. And it's like America versus England. America's getting taxed for unknown reasons. They're going to fight back, make themselves a free country, first democracy. You know what? We're taking down the kings right now. France is here to help out. You know what I mean? And realistically, like, even England, it's like one of those ones, like, because something I know, like, England kind of gets all, like, they get like, whoa, you guys are making us out to be like Nazis in this movie. And it's like, well, let's be honest. There's only one guy's got, like, some ruthless tactics. You got Tavington here. You know what I mean? But really, everybody else is kind of, the rest of the English people kind of, like, aren't necessarily bad unless, you know, they're just following the orders of this Tavington guy who just does things brutal and massacre-like and is the butcher.
We're going to talk a lot about Jason Isaacs in this movie because it's still maybe my favorite movie villain of all time.
Oh, I think, dude, when I was a kid, when this movie came out, I was so obsessed with him to a point where, like, it probably scared teachers that, like, this guy should not have this much of, like, a British obsession with this character, because I thought this guy was so, like, in a sense, cool as far as a villain goes. Because when I was younger, like, well, even to this day and age, like, I've always kind of gravitated towards, like, the villain characters. I always feel like I love, like, the villain characters and so on like that. And, like, no matter, like, how atrocious they can kind of be in a movie, like whenever it's just those guys like that, like him in this movie, Tavington, I'm like, dude, this guy's so brutal but so badass all at the same time.
Yeah, one of the best movie villains I've ever seen. And I tell you what, Star Wars really fucked up only using him in the animated version, because he is the perfect Star Wars villain.
Oh, dude, like, so good.
He would be so good. And they have just, they used him in, was it Rebels, I think? I don't know.
Is that where they used him at?
It was, he was the Inquisitor that was just in the Obi-Wan show.
Uh-huh.
The main Inquisitor in that has got the giant head. He was playing, that's the same character that Jason Isaacs played in the animated show, I think.
Oh, okay.
So why did he just do Jason?
He needed to be in either episode 2 or 3. That would have been the ideal time for him.
He'd been great Dooku.
Yeah, if you want a younger Dooku,
Or save him for Thrawn later. That's we're way off topic, but fucking Jason Isaacs. But
Jason Isaacs, amazing,
and he's great in the Harry Potter movies. I mean,
yeah, that's my favorite character in the Harry Potter movies as well too.
Like it kind of. I mean, honestly, like gosh, he's just so. And Malfoy is so like that kid did such a good job being a little prick.
Yeah.
Yes, you know. Talk about that. I'm not even that big of a fan of the Harry Potter movies. I think they're fun.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I enjoyed them, but like I have like mixed feelings. I don't know what it is. I think it's the schoolness of it all, and how like only British people are accepted into it, and Ron's just that one like Irish exception. Like, you know what I mean? Just
the Irish exception.
Yeah, he literally got in at one point. You know, I mean, they had an affirmative action at one point at Hogwarts, and then they're like, never again.
Irish kids. Oh my God.
They're like, never again. We made a mistake because once one of them got in, the whole family just kept having kids till the end of time.
Jesus. We're toeing the line. This, the Irish exception will be a great bar name.
Yeah, well, that's what I feel like. To me, that's my only person I can really relate to is Ron's my only character in that movie I can relate to, because he's the poor kid who gets to go into the school. Everybody else is kind of a rich douchebag. Even Harry Potter, like his family's like the number one. They just got murdered, but beyond that, he's like just as big as like and rich as like Malfoy and all the rest of them.
He's living in a box under the stairs. We got to talk about the Patriot anyway. But Jason Isaacs is great. That's where that came from. Yeah, anyway, so saw this movie in theaters. This is one of those movies, before I walked in, I knew I was going to fucking love it. Like, I had no doubts this movie was going to be amazing. Yeah. Totally lived the expectations. I was a massive Mel Gibson fan, still am.
Yep.
Personally, yeah. But as a filmmaker, as an actor, still one of my favorites, maybe even second favorite of all time. So I was super, super excited for this movie. I still love the historical fiction genre. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they intended this film to be in that, it is to me. And gosh, this movie's delivered so much. And I have probably watched this movie 30 or 40 times.
Yeah, I've watched the living daylights out of this movie. You know, and it's just so good. Like the whole way through, like you sit down, you throw this movie on, and next thing you know, you've watched the whole thing. That was like how it was. I threw this one on. I thought I was going to kind of watch it in pieces. Didn't work that way. I just watched the whole thing. I'm like, it's just too good.
It moves fast for its runtime.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, it does not feel like a 3 hour. I think the non extended cut is like 2:45, I think.
I think so. Cause the extended cut's 2:55. So yeah, it's just at about 3 hours.
Yeah, it does not feel like it's that long. It's movie has to cover a lot of ground still, though, in what feels like too little of a time to cover it. But man, they get so much into this movie. But you've never seen The Patriot. Obviously, spoilers coming up, which is given with this show, but released June 27, 2000, starring obviously Mel Gibson, directed by Roland Emmerich, Julie Richardson, and Jason Isaacs. And what's the guy's name who plays Cornwallis? Tom Wilkinson.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Who's also very good in this. He kind of gets overshadowed a little bit by how great Jason Isaacs is, but Tom Wilkinson is very, very, he's a very cheeky fellow.
So yeah, he just wants to be the greatest, like, you know, mastermind of war possible, you know, and like, because this is the interesting thing is like what I think is kind of about that 1700s to 1800s, and even in the very beginning of like World War One, that kind of era, is the whole point is like that war almost became like literally a giant chess game in a sense. That's literally what war is. They thought it was like it's civilized now. We're not a bunch of barbarians running around with swords and loincloths anymore. We go out there, we kind of play our chess game with like real people and, you know, come home and, you know, see what we won for the day.
It seems more barbaric in a way.
In a weird way, like it loses the edge of like, you know, I am the master. I am Conan the Barbarian kind of feel like.
Well, also like, you know, guerrilla warfare. Yeah. You're sneaking up on people and they get shot and killed. They don't even know what happened half the time, but the battles can end much more quickly, and people can surrender, and then there's more leeway for you know, trying to do the right thing later, as yeah. opposed to just lining up in a line and, okay, I took my shot, and now we're going to wait to either die or get lucky. Like, it's the dumbest.
Well, it's weird, but it's the thing is, they thought that, like, between, like, England, France, Germany, and so on like that, they thought that this was, like, this is the civilized way of warfare, of, like, how we can dispute things, which more, I think it's just, it's literally just the rich kid gets to play with his giant, like, live-action action figures.
Yeah.
Like that's really what it is. At the end of the day, it's just a bunch of rich kids playing with their, like, human action figures. Which makes it, to me, that almost seems more like, that seems even worse, because it's not like in, like, the old, like, Norse days or something like that, where, like, you know, you just went out and fought off your armies, and if you lost, well, guess what? Now you're a slave until you decide to break free again and then fight them off, and then guess what? Maybe they can be your slave next time around. Like, yeah. That was the difference there.
Yeah, it just feels so stupid. Like, I've never been able to, like, understand why for a long, long time war was fought that way in Europe. It's just so stupid. So,
I mean, literally into World War One, they were still fighting like that at the very beginning of it. That's the thing, too. And then they just realized, like, dude, it's just, these machine guns are just not, it's cutting us down a lot more. Like, if we fought, like, the Battle of Waterloo not that long ago, and it all worked out there, and then what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. They took what the Americans did. Well, they're not that the Americans in this movie invented guerrilla warfare, but
yeah,
it was definitely different enough compared to what was going on at the time to really change the course of everything. But yeah, Mel Gibson's character is this great, just upstanding 1776 man, a pacifist. Used to be in kind of an asshole. Used to chop off some Indians' fingers and send it up river. But now he's settled down. He's got his eight kids. Seven?
Got seven kids.
Seven kids.
Script called for six. Mel Gibson said, I want a seventh.
Yeah, because he had seven.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, yeah. Oh, geez. Sorry. Hitting the microphone. So upstanding gentleman, and his character in this is kind of like a composite of a bunch of historical characters. So it's not like, I can't remember any of their names right now. One of them is very prominent still, like in the South Carolina region. Well, Thomas Sumter, obviously.
Yeah.
That's a big one, you know, Fort Sumter down there, which is a very, very, it's a cool place. If you ever get a chance to go to Charleston, is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're ever in that area, go to Charleston. Like I'm even considering stopping there in a couple of weeks when we're going to St. Augustine, because it is still a beautiful city, ridiculously good food, and the only fucking reason to ever stop your car in South Carolina. Because other than that, fuck that state. I said it. I don't, you know, I live there. I don't care.
Yeah, I feel like that. There's just this North Carolina, South Carolina feud, no matter what.
Well, not really. It's me. It's really on me. It's for the most part, they get along. It's just this bitterness I have for some reason of South Carolina, because it's just not as good as North Carolina. But that's neither here nor there. But it's a cool place. But yeah, he's living down there in Charleston. Charleston mm-hmm. was a big, big, big important city at that time in history. It was like New York, Boston, Philly, Charleston, really.
Yeah.
And he's kind of cool guy, got seven kids, has a bunch of black people working on his farm, but they're not slaves.
No,
it's free.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I don't know where they go home to at the end of the day. You know what I mean? But yeah, they're still land, living on the property. Yeah.
Just because we work this land, okay, just because we live here,
you know,
and just because he doesn't pay us, doesn't mean we're not slaves.
You know, if we got a 401k going right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just can't believe, like,
we go on holiday for 1 month a year.
Yeah, I've taken a sabbatical, and I get my sabbatical next year. It kicks in. No, it's
got my medical leave.
I think I read that Spike Lee said that he walked out of there after that 3-hour movie. He was fuming. I'm like, I'm surprised he made it till the end.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I bet you Roland Emmerich's like, Spike Lee, I didn't make it for you. I know, you know what, Spike Lee, you're a nice fellow and all, but like, we made this for a blockbuster. I just had to fit that in there.
Yeah. Well, listen, our hero has to be a hero. Okay.
Like, yeah, God forbid, you know.
I mean, God forbid we do something to get Mel Gibson canceled.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Oh, man.
The only other way, I guess, if you wanted to go about it and just, like, really bypass that is just skip the fact that he's a rich guy. If you just made him just, like, literally, like, a poor guy that just rises up, I guess you could skip that part there.
It will actually make more sense to not have slaves at that point. He couldn't afford them.
That's what I mean. It's like, you know, that doesn't even... Once he's not working a plantation or anything where he needs to hire any extra people or whatever he's doing, you know what I mean? That makes 10 times more sense. Just be like, you drop that whole thing and you go, okay, whatever. Here's this guy. He could just be a guy like he was in the French Indian War and now he's just kind of a bum on the edge of town or something like that.
Yeah, but then it's less cool when they, like, less motivation when they burn his house down. And
that's true.
Because they do everything in this movie to make Mel Gibson, despite his past, you just root for this guy. Like, he's cool. He has free black people on his land, but they're like not free. Like, they were given to him, like, free. Like, they're free. Whatever.
But still, he seems like the guy. Like, man, in 1776, this is the guy to work for. You know what I mean?
Like, if you're gonna work on a plantation for a white guy,
great. You get free. Gives out free yoga classes. If you ride a bike to work, you get a discount. They're really trying to make it out and be like, you know what? It's fun. You know, we had this whole, like, kind of workplace outing. It was great. You wouldn't believe it. He took us out to Ohio, you know, for the whole week and whatnot. Just this great retreat and everything like that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so he's a great guy.
He is.
And he's got his kids, takes care of them. Wife passed away. So now you have the sympathy factor. Mm-hmm. He's raising these kids on his own with his friends that aren't slaves. And just kind of hanging out. And basically... we're right on the cusp of the American Revolution. The British are, tea's been thrown into the harbor. There's been the Battle of Bunker Hill. There's some shit that's happened. Mm-hmm. And now these colonies are getting together and like, what the fuck are we going to do about it? We said fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
Now we got to stand up and actually do something. So assembly has been convened in Benjamin Martin, which is a great name.
Yeah.
Great name. Shows up, and this movie shocked me initially, and we're not gonna get through the whole plot, but they make him a pacifist for the first like 40 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, because he's like, whoa, I saw war. I was in the French Indian War. You guys don't want to do this. You know what I mean? I killed a lot of French people, killed a lot of Native Americans. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not good. If you want to, you know, I'm all for this free state of America, but I don't want to fight the British.
What's interesting, I'm going to look this up if it was taken from this. There was I don't remember all the details, so some historian's going to get really pissed off listening to this. I remember reading of a similar situation with Washington to this happening. I don't know if it was at Fort Wilderness, which they talk about through the whole damn movie, but where they catch up to some, you know, Native Americans, and that's basically Washington kind of started the French Indian War. So I can't remember all what happened. So I'm assuming they took some of that as inspiration to the Fort Wilderness incident that kind of like looms over Benjamin Martin's character of this entire film.
Well, I think so, because once again, this movie is like, it's not like they did some high historical research. They just kind of weaved it together into making a storyline.
It's like an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, where it's like, yeah, you just weave all this stuff and you piece it all together, and then it's got the historical stuff in there, but then it's also got the brand new own thing going and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. It's it's historical fiction to the max. It really, really is, and it just uses history as a backdrop to a story they're wanting to tell.
Yeah,
it's no different than setting a fictional story in today's time, but it just gets controversial because when you're setting it in historical time, then you got to acknowledge the historical time existed.
Yeah.
And then when you do a lot of revisionist stuff, people tend to get kind of pissed about that, which I kind of understand to an extent. I mean, but I still think this is a really, 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 really good movie.
Most definitely, and so on.
From an entertainment, it's corny.
Yeah, but it's still, it's just like, I don't know. It's still solid. Like, you root for everything in there, and just, you know, I mean, as we're kind of going on, it's like the whole thing is Mel Gibson. He's this pacifist guy, and Heath Ledger, his oldest boy, is like, I want to go join the army, dad. He's like, no, son, you don't want to do that. Like, no. If there's anything, listen to your father. Don't do that. You know, stay here, live on the farm.
Yeah. With our friends.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. They do a good, really good job of outlining why he doesn't want to fight. I love the line at the beginning. He says, would you trade one tyrant 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away?
Yeah.
And he has a whole speech about how the war is going to be fought in their backyards amongst them. And it really sets the tone for what's coming up next. It like makes you like, this guy's the guy who's got to figure it out. Benjamin Marks, the guy they need to fucking listen to. This George Washington prick up north ain't doing shit compared to the ghost, Benjamin Martin.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those ones. And, you know, of course, everybody sort of got their different paths that they want to go into. The guys that want to go to war, the guys that want to side with England, the guys that want to do this and that. And, yeah, it's just that sort of thing that, you know, Heath Ledger decides, like, well, whatever, dad, I'm going to go do my thing. We're going to join the military. It's going to be okay. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So basically, that's where this movie kind of starts off. You got, you know, Heath Ledger's character, Gabriel, being kind of a dick to his dad, said, I'm going to go join the revolution, even though you don't want to. And Gabriel also calling out his dad for being kind of a bitch.
Yeah, well, it makes all the other kids are like, yeah, dad's just kind of a pussy. Like, I don't really get it. Like, you know, even the one kid who's sitting there playing was like Warhammer 40K of like 1776 is calling his dad a little bitch. Be like, son, you play up those dolls over there again? Like, yeah, they're historical accurate, like, you know, war figures.
By the way, the movie.
So, how do you expect to get a girlfriend while you're playing with those? I'm just saying.
The movie
you're
starts.
You're 15 years old.
Yeah, the movie starts by showing his stash that he has up in his attic, where he has his old red coat and his Cherokee tomahawk, which is badass.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, his second son, Thomas, goes and tries all that stuff on, and Dad, what happened at Fort Wilderness? Take that shit off, you little bitch.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically that's what's going on in the movie, the first part. Gabriel's saying Mel Gibson's a bitch, and he kind of is, and he's pacifist, does not want to get involved in this war. His reasoning for it is actually sound.
Yeah.
But he sounds like the most logical guy, which they did a good job in this movie being like, okay, we're going to make it a pacifist, but make it seem like he's in the right. And they do that well.
Mm-hmm.
And so his kids are all like, hey, we want to go fight some redcoats. He's like, no, you're not going to do it. And then the movie kind of jumps forward with the skirmish at his house. And that's when you were introduced to Jason Isaacs.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, when it jumps forward, it almost goes like 2 years from like when Heath Ledger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it sort of says it like in context later on, but like it's one of those ones, like it's been a while. Like Heath Ledger goes out to war for like 2 years and it's kind of like that. And then when he comes home, that's when, you know, Heath Ledger brings the rest of the problems with him. But they have some really cool scenes in the beginning where, like, they're literally at their house and whatnot like that. And, like, off in the distance, you just hear warfare going on. And it's just to kind of say, like, yo, it's literally just, you know, right down the road in a sense. And there's also that really cool scene where, like, the kids are like, hey, we're all playing. Woo! And then they run to, like, the river and they go there. There's just all these bodies just floating down the river and so on like that.
That's in the extended version.
Oh, I guess that's right. That is.
That's what it is. I remember seeing that before.
Scene was in the original one, and the extended version just had a longer version of it. But I guess that is just, which is kind of weird because like that scene seems like one's like, why would you cut that out? That seems like, I feel like, extremely effective.
Yeah, that's one of them. I have seen that before. I didn't see it tonight when I watched it, but that is in the extended version. So if you heard that and you're like, I've never seen that before, well, that's where it's at. So
yeah,
that's part of that 10 minutes of footage.
That's one of the best scenes, I feel like, to set that up, because it just goes from like innocence of kids, warfare off in the distance, but you don't really see it. And then it's like, oh, here literally are the bodies just floating down the river from like what just happened. Like it kind of goes from like they hear the sounds. They hear that, but they don't really put it all together until they see that. It's like, oh, here's some carnage.
Yeah. So, like he said, the war is being fought in their backyard. And then all of a sudden, that's where Heath Ledger reintroduced. He's kind of wounded, comes to the house. And then basically, Benjamin Martin starts taking care of British soldiers and American soldiers.
Yep. He doesn't care.
You know, just trying to do the right thing, doing what his dead wife would want him to do. And then Jason Isaacs shows up and fucking kills one of his kids.
Well, there's that one poor British guy that's there before Jason Isaacs, and he's kind of like he's like the understanding guy. He's got the white wig on and everything like that. And I feel like so bad for this guy, because this guy is really like the British guy who's doing all the right things. Like, you know what I mean? He's really being like the honor, and he literally just gets shot, just dies for the one guy who's doing everything right. Is the guy just gets brutally murdered as well too in the carnage. But he's kind of the guy's like, oh, it's okay, you know. I'm like, hey, it's good that you're taking care of everybody here. I get it, and so on like that. It's real fine. You know what? You know, England's they're gonna understand, so on. And then Jason Isaacs shows up and be like, no, no, no. You kill them all, burn the house. You know what I mean? You slaves, you can come with us to England, you'd be free. Oh, no, master, we actually are free. Instead, I could just kill you right here, or you could come to England.
Yeah. Come work
and work on my plantation in Ohio.
Yeah, that I don't have yet.
Once I get that land yet.
Yeah, it's they do a really good job setting up Jason Isaacs. He's part of the Dragoons.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I guess, like their Green Beret.
Yeah.
You know, they're badasses. They're Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
But he's a dick, and he doesn't follow the – because Cornwallis's thing, you hear a little bit later in the movie where they have that great scene with Mel Gibson and Benjamin Martin and Cornwallis, and the dialogue in it's so, so well written. The acting is so great. Or they're kind of like – you know, coming to terms on, you know, trading things. But Cornwallis before that has a scene where he's talking about how the Americans are brethren. We're going to reestablish commerce with them when the war is over. So most of the people behave like that. Like, hey, we're going to fucking kill you. But then like, are we cool? Because I kind of want to get that, some of that sweet tobacco money you've been sending over.
Yeah, well, that's what it feels like. It feels like England's like, hey, 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 you know what? We just got to go in, slap some Americans around, show them who's boss. You know, get things back in order, you know, let them get that pent up anger out, and then they'll be back under our control again.
They need a spanking. They're there. Yeah,
that's what England's there to do. They're doing that and whatnot. And then you got Jason Isaacs showing up, he's like literally, if you had a knight in chess that just kind of acted on its own, that's what he's doing. Like, you're like, well, there's this one piece I can't control. Yeah. And that's what they sort of make it out to be too.
Yeah.
Is he's the guy who literally is doing, he'll do all the barbaric thing, or he's the guy you call in when he, you know, it's like, hey, this has to be off the books. We need you to get this done any which way you can. But here's the thing. We don't know you. You're on your own. If anything happens, that's it. You're cut off.
Yeah. Such a great villain. They will. It leads, and we're not going to go through the whole thing, but it leads up to a great scene. So Heath Ledger's taken back by the British. They kill all the prisoners, all the American, all the American wounded. They just kill them.
Yeah.
Point blank rage, execute them. They take his not slave slaves. And then right as he's walking up the steps to go back into his house, which they're getting ready to burn down, the second oldest son, Thomas, is like, I'm going to go do something. And he's like, quiet, don't do anything. Because the movie kind of suggests that he's already came up with this plan. Like, he knows what he's going to do.
Yeah. And then Warhammer 40K kid just decides to ruin it for a second.
Yeah. Like, listen to your dad, kid. Like, all you had to do was just shut up for just a second. Listen to your dad.
Yeah.
But no. He thinks his dad's being too much of a pussy. So he goes out there, and then Jason,
I don't know what he expects to happen. There's only like, you know, 300 British soldiers of rifles stand around.
That's Vom, that stupid boy. I mean, kind of.
Yeah, no, let's be honest, that kid was asking to get shot.
Yeah,
he was. You know what I mean? Like, he was. Like, I don't know what he expected was going to happen from that.
Yeah, well.
Even Heath Ledger's like, yo, dude, what are you doing? He's got that look on his face like,
no. Another fuck around and find out moment, you know?
Yeah. Don't you know that dad's just going to melt down all your toys and use them as bullets?
So basically from there on, that's where Benjamin Martin is engaged. He becomes the ghost. Takes his two like elementary school kids out to the fucking woods. Well, yeah. One's probably like sixth, seventh, maybe seventh grade at the most.
Yeah.
In modern terms, you got like a seventh grader and like a, I would say fourth, maybe fifth grader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out into the woods and like, hey, we're going to kill some humans.
Yeah, exactly.
With our muskets.
Yeah. This is one of the best action scenes in almost like mostly any movie.
I would agree.
This is one of those ones. This sets you up so much well. You're like, holy crap.
It does all the things. So, first of all, the motivation is there. Like, you're pissed that these bad guys are really bad. And they've got his other son hostage. You're going to go hang him.
Yeah.
And showcase him. His other son's dead. They just took his not slave slaves. And so you have all that. Then they do a great job of setting up the geography of the situation. He lays out his muskets in different places so he doesn't have to reload all the time.
Yeah.
He can, like, take two or three shots before reloading, and then he goes back and reloads them as he goes on. The whole aim small, miss small thing that he tells his sons before they're going to go snipe some damn redcoats, you know, during their summer vacation from school.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, like, it's just, you know, and just like, you know, just the action and the kind of guerrilla warfare and the sniper kind of tactics of, like, you shoot one, then you run to another location, shoot again, so that nobody has any idea of what's going on. They think that there's way more soldiers up there than there really is. You know what I mean? And then just to top it off, it's like, not only is that part just badass, he runs down there with the hatchet and just starts going, like, you know, just taking them out left and right. And these guys just don't know what's coming at them.
Yeah, I love that whole scene, because not only is it a great action scene, but the movie has kind of pent up. You're kind of pent up at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, I need some redcoats to die. I need to see some real action at this point. So this movie just kind of, like,
just splooges rips action. The lid off. Yeah.
Yeah, it really does, because that whole scene is amazing. And then it culminates with the very bloody. I remember the first time I saw that scene where Mel Gibson, like, chops up that dude, the Creek. I'm like, holy fuck, this is awesome.
That's what I remember too. And then I remember I remember laughing when the TNT version came out, because they, like, turned the blood to, like, dirt as he's, like, slamming down.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, because I remember when the TNT version came out, because I don't think I had the movie yet on, like, VHS. So I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna watch Patriot again. Watch down there, and then all of us going to school the next day, I'd be like, dude, did you see that version on TNT? That was hilarious.
I think I had a similar experience to that, actually, because I remember it being dirt.
Yeah, it was just like, it's like dirt's flying up instead of blood.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, he just sort of, like, hacks the living daylights out of this. The kids are standing like, oh, geez, Dad. You know, and then there is a scene in the extended cut where, like, it shows there's, like, this one British guy that, like, gets kind of, like, left there, and he's all bloody and wounded. He's just looking up with, like, the most frightful, like, ghost eyes, like, oh, oh, which later on cuts to be that one that Tavington's kind of, like, asking, like, what happened.
Yes, yes, yes. I actually remember seeing that now. I remember seeing that in the extended cut. There is some, like, cool stuff in there then.
Yeah, the extended cut's, like, once. It's not, like, one of those things where it's, like, a make or break. Like, if you didn't see that stuff, you know, there. But no. It is a lot of cool stuff, though. It definitely adds to, like, the definitive version of the movie, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, basically from then that point on, it just becomes, you know, a really, really good war movie. But one thing about this movie that blew my mind is it ups the ante later on, because they kill Benjamin Martin's kid at the beginning of it. That's really all you need. I mean, they kill John Wick's puppy. John Wick kills people for, like, five movies.
Yeah.
Well, this movie, like, you get the motivation, and then right when they're starting to win and have some fun, shit all crumbles down. The British start figuring out their plans. And then right when it seems like it's going to be happy again, they go to Slave Island and have fun and listen to the music that sounds eerily similar to John Williams' like, new Ewok music.
Oh yeah. Well, there's also, I always think when, like, they show up there, they'd be like, you just know everybody there. I was like, fuck, what are you guys, dude, no, go away. You know what? They literally came for you at your own house and burned it down, and now you're coming here. That means the British are going to come here looking for you and burn down our houses. It just was that thing, like, they get there, like, hey, what's going on? You mind taking care of my six kids that I have left, or five, I guess, by this point?
I always thought it would be really funny. This is, it would be really funny if they saw those white people walking in. There was, like, the camera cuts to a black guy, like, there goes the neighborhood.
Well, that's literally what it is. It just feels like one of those ones, like, kind of like, I thought we got away from this, and here they come. Now they come back. You know what?
God damn it! I'm tired of not being. I like being a not slave slave. But that island is beautiful. That's a real place.
Yeah.
Well, obviously it's a real fucking island, but yeah, I mean, I'm saying it's like
a CG movie.
I'm saying it was like a real thing that happened. Like there was like a little place they hid and stuff like that. I don't think it was exactly like that. I know there's an island in Georgia where there was It's a real cool place. It's called Jekyll Island. And I can't remember all the details, but essentially it was a bunch of like wealthy plantation owners built their houses on this island. Mm-hmm. But they're only there like 2 months out of the year. So the slaves were there all year long. So the rest of the year they lived in the plantations and did whatever the hell they wanted.
Yeah.
It's a really cool place. But Slave Island seems a lot cooler.
You know, they're all their kind of summer cabin plantation is pretty much what it was.
Basically, honestly, yeah. I mean, I've been there. It was really cool. Not Slave. Actually, it was Gullah. So like Gullah Island, which I think is actually in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But do you remember that show, Nick Jr.?
That sounds kind of familiar, but...
Binya Pollywog, everybody's favorite frog. Gullah Gullah Island. Gullah Gullah. Binya. No?
I don't know. I didn't watch as much Nickelodeon compared to other things.
Well, I only remember this when I had, you know, my brother and sister were at the perfect age when that was out.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Gullah Gullah Island. And that's I think it's in North Carolina. It might be in South Carolina, but it's a real place. And I think that was either shot there or it was based off that in the movie. I'm not sure. I know there's a relationship between that island in the movie and a real place. So there's that. So do your own research for it. But it's a real thing that happened. But I always feel bad though when they show up. It's like, oh man, they got their own place. They're all free. They don't have anything to do with that war. They're just literally cooking and playing Ewok music. John Williams scores this, by the way, always forget.
Yeah, I know. I forget that too. And then when I turn and I see the credits, I'm like, oh yeah, totally. I forgot about that.
Well, I remembered it. That was the scene I remembered it because that music does sound like not the Yub Nub Ewok music, but the one they replaced it with later.
In
the special editions, that music that they play on the island sounds really similar to that.
Yeah.
And his score for this, I think I will say this is one of his weakest scores.
Well, because the thing is, it's like the music I remember in this movie is actually like the real music. Like, because we always think of like the like all like the marching anthems and stuff like that, like bum 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 bum, like that kind of stuff that goes like that's what I think about when I think of the music in this movie. And I kind of forget his score is sort of there. It's kind of like lighter in the background compared to like all this other stuff.
Yeah. But he does have some good themes for the evil British people. But yeah, I can't even picture Roland Emmerich and John Williams working together.
Yeah, that just felt like that just kind of like, hey, like this would be kind of an interesting combo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right.
It's that weird thing because it's like Roland Emmerich kind of goes from being just like the real like kind of like action kind of, I'm not going to say it in a bad way, but like a sort of like the B-movie sci-fi guy to all of a sudden he hits like Independence Day and it's like, oh, whoa, this guy just made one of the biggest blockbusters of all time. This guy understands America more than anybody in America. He's from Germany or whatever.
German, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, well, let's give him more American projects. You know what I mean? Like,
that's funny.
Godzilla, America. You know, the Patriot, America. You know what I mean? Like... Because it's that's what he starts off. It's like, what's he got? He's got Stargate, and he's got, like, Universal Soldier, and he's got, like...
He had Stargate. That was him? I forgot that was him.
That's right. What I mean. Because all his original movies are all, like, super sci-fi kind of action movies. And they're all fantastic stuff. Like, that's the thing. Whenever people tell me, like, oh, yeah, Roland Emmerich's not that great of a director, I'm like, dude, you obviously haven't watched his catalog then.
Here's the thing. The movies he does, they're not smart. It's not going to challenge you intellectually. I mean... Independence Day is one of my favorite blockbusters I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's stupid as fuck. It's a dumb, dumb, dumb movie.
It's fun as all can be, though. Yes. That's the bottom line that matters.
Like, just the things that happen with the characters in Independence Day, we're not going to review that, but like how coincidentally Will Smith, who's getting ready to save the world, his stripper girlfriend ends up with the first lady, and all the characters end up with each other. It's so weird. And the movie just, even when they, SETI out of New Mexico, and they're like, SETI, dude, it's SETI. Anyway, that movie is so, so stupid. And this movie is also kind of stupid, too, especially from a historical thing. But the characters, there's something about it.
Yes.
There's something about it. It's just super entertaining. And Red Letter Media bashes Independence Day, and that's the one movie I disagree with them on so much because it's stupid, but I love it.
That's well, the thing is, it's like, and so the thing too is like, movies can, you know, the entertainment value I think outweighs everything else. It's the fun factor is the most important part in any form of media to me. It's not saying that there can't be other stuff in there, but like that's the thing that's the top tier. Like, is if the movie's fun, that can be outweigh the acting, that mm-hmm. can outweigh the script, that can outweigh the accuracy, that can outweigh the special effects, all that stuff.
It definitely outweighs the accuracy because that's where you can separate this as a movie from then a. If you want a historical fact, go watch a fucking documentary or read a book.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like that. That's what you do, and you know, it's that thing that like. It's more about the big picture. It's more about like, and I feel like this thing still gives you, it's not like, oh, you know, the British were like invaded by like an alien empire that converted them over to want to come by and take back America. It's not like that's
giving you like. I kind of see that now though.
You know what I mean? But like people make it out like it's that, and it's like, it's pretty, I mean, if you just take the simplicity of it, like as a paragraph description of like the Revolutionary War, this movie describes that for you. Like you got it. If you want to learn more, then go deeper.
As a story, while it's cheesy, it's corny, it's kind of silly, it's very, very engaging. And the cool thing about this movie, what I was getting to is, you know, when I said it ups the ante, you know, yes. You had the whole first part of the movie, then they win for a while, then the next act comes along and things start falling apart, and then they kill his other kid. They kill yeah. Heath Ledger. Now, always used to
well,
bother
that,
me.
And then... And even before Heath Ledger, though, they got the bird in the church captain part.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They got that part that really says, like, hey, guess what we're going to do? We're going to, you know, lock all these people inside a church, have the guy who was, like, in a sense, part of the town, but he decided to side with the British. He's the guy who's got to throw the torch onto it, and he's going to kill everybody that he pretty much knows and grew up with. Like, I think that's, like, such a ballsy thing that, like, how Tavington says, no, burn the church captain.
It's, The character, there's so much motivation for the characters. You're invested in their story. You're invested in their lives. Is it stupid? Yes, but man, it's entertaining. It's like, honestly, I wish.
And it's not even really stupid in a sense. Like that's pretty. Like I feel like all these things in here. I mean, like it still has, because the thing about this movie has a lot of balls in it too. Like it's got a lot of violence. It's got a lot of things that other movies couldn't touch. Like in a sense, where like they wouldn't go that far. And go that kind of evil and even like things like that. I think that's what makes it like stronger than just a straight up even blockbuster movie, even though I know that's kind of what's in that category. But
I have mixed feelings on them killing Heath Ledger's character, though, because I feel like you didn't need to at that church scene. Mm-hmm. And then it makes the ending kind of less special because it would have been really cool to see him share that moment at the end with Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it makes Jason Isaacs so much more killable and punchable and just raises the stakes for the end of the movie so much. I mean, the big epic. Dude.
Yes. That ending battle.
Well, it's weird because just the symbolism in it. Even before, here's something people kind of forget and just kind of get to wax nostalgic for a minute. Even before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
There was this kind of weird surge of patriotism going on because, and this is not me advocating for any political party or any idealism here. I'm just saying this is what's going on at the time. You have your 8 years of Reagan, you have your 12 years of George H.W. Bush. In that time, it's super America, super patriotic. And it wasn't like the same as the Make America Great Again. It was Reagan's thing was Shining City, Hell on the Hill, Manifest Destiny, the world needs us, America's important, you have the Cold War going on, and you have all these things happening, right? And then you get the Clinton years, which honestly was pretty chill. We were fucking balancing the budget. I mean, the biggest villain we have, we don't have Gorbachev anymore. But, you know, Saddam, we're not really thinking about him that much at that time. It's like fucking Newt Gingrich is the biggest opponent to like Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
We kind of got bored. I think like America kind of like, okay, yeah, things are kind of cool right now. But, you know, he's getting BJs in the office. We're kind of pissed off at this Bill Clinton guy right now. We miss some America. We miss some Reaganism.
Let's make some Air Force One. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
let's
we get your Air Patriot. Force Ones. You're Saving Private Ryan, which is obviously made also because of the 50th anniversary of D-Day. But I think, right?
Well, yeah. And once again, Saving Private Ryan, that's the start to like that kind of modern era golden age of war movies. Because like when Saving Private Ryan comes out, there's an explosion, especially World War II stuff. Because that was like, it just felt like, hey, because they didn't, like, in a sense, it sounds weird, but like, there's always World War II movies, but it feels like there's a, in a sense, a slight dry spell between like the 90s and the 80s and even to like the 70s. Like that's like by the 70s, they kind of burnt out sort of like a Western movie sort of did. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I'm not saying that there isn't, there is, you know, World War II movies and, you know, probably every single year at some point, if you look hard enough, yeah. But once Saving Private Ryan hit, like not only did that just make World War II just boom, but it brought all the other wars. Cause after that, they're like, hey, we got Vietnam. We, you know, we got World War I, we got the, you know, Revolutionary War. All these ones started coming. I mean, it made all the video games started coming out right then. There's like Medal of Honor, into Call of Duty, all this stuff like that. And war just, it sounds weird, but war became just like the really cool thing to kind of bring in. And I feel like I myself was like, you know, that History Channel, you know, kid, because when History Channel came out, I watched the Living Daylights album, and I was ultra obsessed with war, so much so that sometimes, like, you know, there'd be issues in school because of how much that me and my friends would talk about war and communists and all of these things. And, you know, this is like, well, yeah, we just all sit around watching like History Channel, and then we come to school and discuss it. I know that throws you guys off.
Yeah, don't you? Whatever, fuck school.
It probably didn't help that we had this thing that, like, because we played so much Command and Conquer, that we had these things that was like pretty much like, how can you play Command and Conquer on paper with pen and paper type stuff? So we had these things called battle plans where, like, I would draw my army on one page and my buddy would draw it on the other page, and then we'd combine them together and kind of take turns fighting each other. But, like, I remember when the teachers found it, we had these things called battle plans. Oh, that wasn't a. They don't want to find a bunch of things in your bag that are titled battle plans and things like that.
Oh, gosh, I had way worse at my school. But it's like they would want you to do that as opposed to what, whatever.
I don't know. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, shouldn't you be grateful that the kids are kind of into, like, you know, history and, you know, war? Well, I guess, like, you know what I mean?
I don't know. But there was a groundswell of patriotism even pre 9/11 to an extent, not the same as after 9/11, but there was some. I think that's even why Bush won that election, Chad's notwithstanding, but it's that, yeah, I think so.
Because once you get past like mid 90s, it's almost like, I think, kind of like 97 on up, that kind of like glory, it's almost even like Independence Day sort of starts off like a lot of that too, because that kind of like has patriotism, but kind of like, it doesn't feel like that's the main theme at first, but when you see it in there, it's like, oh, no, that's a big deal right there. It's like world patriotism, but it's still patriotism.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like Roland Emmerich, this German.
Yeah, like, he's the guy who
great
just...
Great American movies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And just like, as I said, like, yeah, this everything about the patriot just like just pumps you up and someone like that. And I'll even say it's like, I know that like the British people see that as like them as being just the most evil tyrants. I feel it's like it's more just one guy. And I know, but it's like at the same time, it's like, hey, this war literally, I feel like that's one of those ones, like it comes from the very American angle. Like, of course, it's like it's supposed to be good on our end and so on like that. You know what I mean? And it's one of those few ones that's like, it's like, okay, like all wars, there's always a point for each side of like what they want and so on like that. But I feel like that's like the one time where it's like, yo, British people, you might as well just back off just a little bit here, because this is like a big breaking point for like all nations, like, you know, 1776, you know what I mean? That's the start of like the modern age in a sense. You know what I mean? We finally start kicking out the kings out of the castles who have been in there for 2,000 plus years. And it's like, no more of this. French Revolution comes in. Russian Revolution comes in. All these, like, let's overthrow these monarchies. Like, it's a big, big, you know, deal to kind of get that. And that's where I feel like that's where we get to our modern era, where we get these awesome things and we get to, you know, talk to each other online and see it, tell each other how awesome the 1776 was in the movie The Patriot.
It's great. The ending of the movie. Well, first of all, the Smithsonian helped with aesthetically. This movie looks great. Not only is it great cinematography, first of all, so to establish what we're about to talk about. The costumes are really, really good. It feels overly like it feels very authentic. The only thing I never really thought felt super authentic was the character of Charlotte. Her clothing looks like almost too modern sometimes. But I mean, that Robin Hood movie with Taron Egerton a few years ago where you can like see buttons and shit. But
well, that Robin Hood one was, I don't know what that Robin Hood movie was exactly going for. It was like,
Yeah.
I still watch it because I watch anything Robin Hood, but like, and it was, I didn't dislike it. I was just, it was just, I don't know.
Weird. But
yeah, weird. That's the best description.
Yeah. But this movie, it looks good. So it, everything has culminated up to this point. You're like, all this imagery, you got this swell in your soul of just like, oh man, America. And then after Gabriel is killed by Jason Isaacs, who already killed his first son, he's burned down a house, killed a bunch of civilians. He's wanting to take over Ohio. He wants to do all these things. Mel Gibson's like, nah, I'm out. Fuck this shit. I don't want to do this anymore. It's the Rocky moment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. And then he finds the flag.
Yeah.
That Gabriel's been working on throughout the entire movie. God said, that's a lost cause. He goes, yeah. I'll fucking show you. And he rides up with that flag waving high. And that is so iconic. People still talk about this.
Yeah. The flag part, I mean, like that scene right there, you could literally have the, you know, Mel Gibson run up the flag on a loop for 24 hours for 4th of July. And that people would be like, hell yeah. That'd be like the equivalent of like the Christmas fire on TV, but for 4th of July.
Yeah. It's the only scene I could think of that's more patriotic to me is the Sandlot, the Ray Charles America, the beautiful 4th of July scene, which is still.
Oh yeah.
That actually might be my favorite scene of all time, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
But this is a close second, and not a favorite all time, but it's just of patriotism, America. I mean, dude, he literally kills people with an American flag.
Yeah.
I mean,
so badass.
It really is. I mean, he just takes it to another level, and it's somehow, is this better than Braveheart?
I like this more than Braveheart. I love Braveheart. Don't get me wrong. I think Braveheart's a perfect movie, but I like Patriot to me is one of my all-time favorites, no matter what. Like, I think overall, I just think with everything, I think probably at the end of the day, if you had to, like, if you were going to sum it up, not based on like nostalgic love or what you personally prefer, I probably would say Braveheart is actually probably the better movie. But I mean, that's such like a opinion piece right there. But I think as far as my favorite, I think I love Patriot way more.
I think the action's better in Braveheart a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's probably technically Braveheart's the better movie.
Yeah, it's a more beautiful movie. It's more of a cinematic. It's a more of a critic's darling.
Yeah.
Then I don't even know what the tomato score of Braveheart is. I'd be interested to see because there's a lot of revisionist history in that too. All of it against the British. Mel Gibson fucking hates the British.
It's this weird British, because I remember, because that was even the complaint that because the writer for The Patriots, the same writer as Saving Private Ryan, and the British people were pissed off at Saving Private Ryan because they did when the on D-Day they just didn't focus on any of the British acts and any of that stuff there. Same with the Australians, I think too. And
yeah,
the Canadians that nobody ever brings up enough.
This movie is very similar. How Tom Cruise had Top Gun and then Days of Thunder, Mel Gibson has Braveheart and then The Patriot. I mean, they're very similar movies, set in a different time and place, different war, a few subtle differences, but it's there's a lot of similarities between the two movies.
Yeah, they almost even have kind of some similar beats and everything. Like, it sounds weird. Like, when I watch Patriot, it does make me go, man, I haven't seen the Braveheart in a while. I'd like to go back and check that thing out too.
I love Braveheart too.
That's what I mean. In Braveheart, as I said, that's a perfect movie. Like, that's one of those movies. Like, whenever every time I watch it, I'm like 4 out of 4 perfect. Like, that movie all is. But like, same time, I think the same way of Patriot. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun factors through the roof. So that would be. They're a good, like, even though like this would be a long day, but they're a great double feature movie. Spread it out between a couple days if need be. But like, both of these movies, I feel kind of go back to back pretty nicely.
Yeah, I think Patriot, Gladiator, Braveheart. That's like a great box set right there.
Yeah.
Of just man, testosterone, freedom movies. Justifies you. All three of them do a good job of justifying you wanting them to kill people and feeling okay with it. And ultimate heroes. This is a fun movie. I think if you look at it as a movie, is it a great movie? Is it going to challenge you artistically or challenge you intellectually? No. Is it fun escapism? I think it's an A+ in terms of that. I think it's it's very coherent. It's not like, you know, it's not when I say it's stupid, it's just some of the messaging. It's not stupidly made. It's
yeah, because I say, because it's like, it's one of those ones to me, like, I look at this movie and this movie to me makes me want to deep dive way more into the Revolutionary War. That's how I was as a kid watching it and so on like that. So I feel like that's making it pretty smart. You know what I mean? Like, I feel if you, even the, some of the stuff that might seem dumb, I mean, like, I feel stupid's like when you get to like, you know, like one of like the, in a sense, parody movies, that's almost like the level of stupidity.
Yeah.
Like, here's just, I think sometimes this one just, this rides more of like the, just, it's a good roller coaster ride of a blockbuster where it's, you know, it's not making, it's not like Born on the 4th of July where it's like, hey, let's really think about the war right now and think about all the issues that are kind of going on with it. This one's more just like, no, you know what? There's an issue going on and somebody's got to stand up to the challenge and solve it. Let's strap those boots on, grab an American flag and charge in head first. Cause you know, we got a plan already going.
Ah, man, good old days. Back when we actually were happy enjoyed America.
I know that's the thing is the downfall is something kind of happened in the last while where we've lost sort of like these great, well, I will say this actually, you know what? There was those movies that came out. There was White House is Down and Olympus Has Fallen. Those were those movies that kind of came out around that time period that gave me the old school kind of patriotic, like action movie kind of vibe. And it gave me that almost like, in a sense, I almost want to say one of them was produced by Roland Emmerich, but I think White House is Down is, which is ironically, because I remember like that one's actually, I think kind of the better one, even though it's PG-13 over the other one that's R even, but I love both those ones still, but they have that Air Force One feel, that patriot kind of feel to it, that like, they sort of just kind of came out under the radar sort of, and just like, you know, here they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, another group of them, if you want like a modern day equivalent to some patriotic movies, and they're all three really, really good. Not one of them is not super America, but it's still pretty patriotic. But as the, it's Mark Wahlberg. You have Patriots Day. And then what's the other one where he was the sniper or whatever, and he's called? Deepwater Horizon. Lone Survivor, Deepwater Horizon.
I remember seeing that one in theaters and just like the old people tore that theater up so hard afterwards.
Yeah, all of those are really good. And Deepwater Horizon, if you've never seen it.
Yeah, I never saw that one. I saw I saw Lone Survivor. I guess I didn't see the other two now that I think about it.
Peter Berg is the director I'm thinking of. You should see Deepwater Horizon. You maybe in terms of multiple explosions. Maybe the best explosion movie I've ever seen.
Really? Yeah. As I said, that one always looked interesting and it just kind of came and went. I was just, I sort of missed that one. But
I have it on. I'm going to send you my Vudu. I'm going to have to do that tonight. You have to watch that. You will like that one. I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
Did you see Patriots Day?
No, I didn't see that one either. The race one or whatever.
That's where the bombing happens at the Patriots. Yeah. So those are some other patriotic movies that are out of the VHS era.
Yeah.
And this one's right on the cusp anyway. Anyway, things are happening here at the younger household, so I got to start wrapping things up. But if you've never seen The Patriot, it's on Netflix right now. You go watch it. It's 2 hours, 45 minutes. It's a great escapist action flick for the 4th of July if you want something like that. So highly recommend it.
Yeah. No, I can't recommend this one higher if you just haven't seen it. Like, especially if you're into war movies. I mean, if you're in the war movies, but you like it in like a more of a, I guess, the entertaining fun factor, but it still just kind of gives a good sense of like how these, you know, 1700s wars are kind of fought and what they sort of look like and so on. It just delivers on all fronts here. I mean, I feel like I think everybody on this team's pretty much firing pretty much on all cylinders, actors, directors, creators, you know, special effects. The nice thing is it's still at that kind of pre-CG era. So like there's only very little things ever used in it. Mostly everything's pretty darn realistic stuff where, you know, if this movie was shot nowadays, you know, there'd be five actors and everything else around it would be CG. Just how it is.
I'm going to be started.
And that's what makes this movie feel huge. This is like one of the, this is like that tail end of like movies that have like a very big scope to them.
Mm-hmm. Where they feel John like, Ford, like big.
Yes, that John Ford feel, but like, you know, like in a sense, like in the 90s, I guess you want to say a more modern era, it's like the Kevin Costner movies. They all have that ginormous feel to them that you just don't get anymore because every movie nowadays is just shot like generally on like green screens that they feel like they all kind of like happen in like a theater room basement. So. You know, that's something that's kind of missing. Even good movies. Yeah, good movies still have that problem. you know, yeah, where they just, they feel smaller than they really like, than like they should be. But no, this one's like all around pure amazing. One of my childhood favorites that like I can always watch. It puts a smile on my face, even on like the horrific scenes, because I've just watched this movie so many times. And I just think of all the times of being in school, quoting this movie and so on like that, left and right and so on there. That, yeah, there's just too many good memories in this one. I could literally, like, I probably hadn't watched this movie in, like, 5 or 6 years, but I could still, like, almost, like, quote this movie as I'm going through it. Because I just have seen it that many times and love it that much.
Well, if you've never seen it, like I said, Netflix right now, The Patriot, I love it. Spencer loves it. It's a good, fun American time. And we've got some more stuff coming up next week. We're kind of bookending the 4th of July with two America movies. We haven't decided on our second one yet, but it'll probably be from the 80s, I think. So we got some more patriotic stuff coming up. But if you want to talk to us, always go to oldmanorange.com. You can find everything that Spencer does. It's amazing over there. The Pizza Boys comics and all kinds of great stuff. You want to yell at me, go to @VHS. On Twitter, @VHS Pod on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok when I reuse that @VHS. And if you're weird, you can find me on Facebook, I guess. But anyway, thank y'all for listening. Hope y'all had a good time. And happy 4th of July to y'all. And with that, VHS is out.